or tune to Maranatha Drive on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
We are continuing with our theme for the week. We call it the Bible Corner, and every day of the week we try and address some certain theme that is topical, something that is necessary, something that is pertinent in assisting us to live our daily lives. And this week we are focusing with Dr. J, looking at matters of coping with loss, coping with grief. You know, when we think of grief and loss, it's difficult to find someone who experienced a more severe loss, right, than Job. I mean, he's the epitome of loss. A man of upright morals and integrity, yet, it's quite perplexing to most of us that God would allow, or perhaps more accurately invite, that much calamity on one man's life. And perhaps the doctor will help us put these things into perspective. Mfundisi, good afternoon to you and welcome to the Maranatha Drive.
Good afternoon to yourself and to your listeners.
Thank you so much for joining us, trusting that we find you well this afternoon.
I'm quite good, thank you.
You're marvelous, marvelous. No, we're okay, Baba. We are okay, and the Lord is still keeping us. Thank you so much for joining us once again.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Mfundisi, we're talking grief and loss this week, and thank you for having joined us the past couple of days as we try and address this matter to the listeners and help them to perhaps come to terms and how to deal with it. And they say you don't move on, right? You might move forward, but not on. And today's topic, or at least the theme for today, is one that is, it almost seems unreal, like it's a fiction, it's a figment of God's imagination. Please take us through the story of Job, you know, for those who might not be as familiar, because they might think if I say it, I'm exaggerating.
Well, yeah, in fact, even amongst theologians and Bible scholars, there is no agreement. There are those who feel that the book of Job belongs to fiction. And I think that it's because of what to us as human beings, what we see as senseless suffering of Job, a good man, just mm-hmm. as you mm-hmm. have said. Even God himself says he is a good man, and none is as good as Job is.
Yeah, yeah.
And the devil does not contradict that. He actually says it is so because, he explains what he explains. But both God and the enemy agreed that Job was as blameless can be.
Yeah.
But then he goes through the worst kind of human suffering that we can imagine, and particularly as it relates to the loss and grief. He describes his own loss and grief as unimaginable himself. By the time you hit chapter 3, even parts of chapter 2, Job is so depressed, so absorbed in his sorrow for loss, in his grief for the loss that he had suffered, that he wishes he could die.
Yeah.
How deep his sorrow was. And perhaps we may want to be quick to mention that not only did he lose his children, not only did he lose his wealth, but he also lost a companion in his wife. And that is a very confusing type of loss and grief.
True.
When the person is here, but they are not here. They're near you, but they are not with you. You're just not together. If anything, their own self-positioning makes your experience even worse. And I'm not saying this with condemnation to Mrs. Job, because Job's loss mm-hmm. needs to be recognized too, would have been his wife's loss as well. The only difference is that he he got sick. He lost his health amongst the losses he suffered. She didn't. That's the only difference. She remained healthy in the body, but in the spirit, in her heart, she experienced the brokenness. And those were his her children as well that died.
I wanted to actually add, Doc, sorry to interject, that in actual fact, some say she might have experienced the loss more than Job, because she carried these 10 for 9 months each. That's 90 months. So, yeah, she really felt it.
That story of caring.
Yeah, yeah.
Of pregnancy, it can be a subject on its own. But yes, she was a mother. And we know that... Mothers or females, they are more in touch with their emotions.
True.
So their experience of grief comes unhindered. They feel everything because generally they are more in touch with their emotional side more than we are.
Yeah. And When you look at the story, and I like how the doctor was at least quite clear and honest with us to say, yeah, there is still some argument and some debate in the theological staff room to say which way do we go? Because I mean, you lose your children, you lose all of them, you lose your livestock, you lose all of it, you lose your property, you lose all of it, you lose your health, almost all of it, you lose your spouse, like you were saying, and you're like, come on, guys, on one person. I know people can go through some tough times, but like this, you know, why would God? I don't know. In your expertise, Mfundisi, why would God permit, or at least invite? I mean, because when Satan, the story comes through, he says Satan was wandering, minding his own business. God says, we're happy. He's like, no, I've been doing just some roaming around on earth. And then God, like, from nowhere, hey, did you see Job? Like, how, guys? I can't even imagine Job, if he could hear eavesdropping this conversation, looking up, is how, God, can't imagine what's going on here. Why does he invite on like you were saying, the Bible making a testament of Job's life to say none was as righteous as he is? Why would God make such an invitation to such suffering and then permit even extended suffering on one of his own? And is that the nature of God, that we must just be living in worry that one day maybe he might inviting on us?
I would like the part where he's... I would like it if he could say to anybody, including the devil, because of the evil one's evil and wicked heart, I would like for God to can be able to say, yay, there is Jay down there.
Ah.
And I have no complaints about him.
Ah.
You should have seen him.
Okay.
I would love that. But I would also prefer that he just brags about me without permitting the enemy to have access.
Certainly.
You know. Look, perhaps right from the onset, we need to say what we observe in this book is that as human beings, we have got limited understanding of how God works, even of how nature or creation works.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that should humble us. So I would want to confess here that I don't have the answers to the big issues, big questions that are here. In fact, the subject of conversation today, it's confusing to me, leaves me a bit perplexed.
Yeah.
It cuts me to size. I get to have to submit that I do not understand how God works. The way you have phrased your question around this, how fair is this? How could God provoke the devil, draw his attention, knowing how evil the enemy is, and God does that knowing that he's not going to put a hedge around Job against these attacks. God did not deny that he had put a hedge around Job. This I do understand from the narrative here. When Satan says, is it not because you have covered him? God did not say, no, I didn't put a hedge. He said, he's worshiping me not because of that. So God had put a hedge. So I ask together with you, why did he remove it? Why did he give an express permission to the enemy to access Job? And in the way that he did.
Look,
it's even more problematic to me that his sons, Job's sons, that is, they were not the subject of that conversation. They were not, they are not the ones who are said to have been so righteous that the enemy would want to particularly target them. And when God opened the hedge around Job, it also gets to the point where the innocent sons, whatever I mean by innocent,
that's a subject
the ones
for debate.
That are murdered here. Yeah.
True.
You
true.
Know. But listen to this.
Okay.
Then Job says, when he sees at the end of this, the report of the calamities, record says, and God, Job tore his clothes, he put ash on his body, and he bowed down to worship God. So right there, I ask, who has won in this great controversy that is being fought between human beings? I mean, in the human beings are the target. They are the center of it, between good and evil, between God and the enemy. Even when the enemy had struck, this one thing I know is that it did not cause Job to leave God. He goes to worship in his sorrow, in his grief.
Hey.
But listen to his expression. He says, naked I came in here, naked I will make my exit. God had given, Jehovah had given, Jehovah had taken. So Job, you and I know that God had given and the enemy had taken. Can you imagine how it must feel like to think God had given and it is God that has taken? So his sorrow is even, our understanding of his grief and sorrow is not as accurate as he would have experienced it, because he even thought the pain came from God. And he ends up making that conclusion after having asked himself all the questions we're asking ourselves. And he comes up with that understanding, which is misaligned to the reality about God.
But is it not?
God is a provider. The enemy is a destroyer.
I know that you're a theologian, and obviously you need to make the story sound Christian at the end of the day. But here's the challenge, though, Baba. And I like how you're saying, isn't it because of the pain that Job, I know that we are saying, we then say, no, he ended up washing and everything, but isn't the standing theologically, like you're saying, that he ends up on based on the fact that his experience was so painful? I think it was Stalin, if I'm not mistaken, the Russian leader, who said, this is how you control people. He takes a chicken, he plucks it off all its feathers, causing it immense pain. The chicken is bloody. He puts it on the ground and then he starts feeding it. And the thing, what happens? The chicken starts walking towards him and he says, now this chicken, even though I caused it so much pain, it will follow me all my life. Is that not the experience of Job? That God causes him so much pain that he has no choice but to follow him, because at the end of the day, he is the provider of everything he needs?
I would think the posture of Job was that of surrender.
Though he slay me, yet will I trust him.
Yeah. And I cannot understand what that means, but I would like to be so surrendered that I can be able to, from the bottom of my heart, to say, though he slay me, I will trust him. And that trust that he's expressing, it's not because God is already providing. So it will differ from the Stalin story in that sense. The chicken follows Stalin when he is feeding it.
Mm-hmm.
This one, Job says, I'll trust him in spite of him slaying me, and that is his understanding at that point. But here's the thing. We may be the theologians that we may be, biblical scholars and biblical students. We may be the people of the word, and we think we understand what we are reading. But the reality is there's lots that we do not understand from the word, and that we do not understand about the God in whom we have our faith and trust. And when you look at the book of Job, nowhere does God try to defend himself or to explain himself to Job and to us as the listeners or as the readers. I think that perhaps we need to humbly leave the question of defending God to himself. Where he doesn't defend himself, where he doesn't explain himself, maybe we should not venture to try to. Lest we make the same mistake and say God had given.
Now he has taken. No, I hear you. I hear you. And maybe, Doc, as you wrap up the lesson for us, what would be then the take home for the listener who is still perhaps battling with their own moments of grief, with their own moments of loss, and they are almost at that defeatist? I mean, I like how you're saying there's a difference between surrender and being defeatist, where you're like, you know what, I'm just giving up. How would you say they can learn from the story of Job, especially the conclusory moments of that experience that we find?
I would pray that God help all of us rely on what we know for sure about God when there are moments of doubt and suffering. We will not always get the explanations and the clarity of our current suffering during the moments of loss and grief. Nothing may make sense. But let us move back to the times where it was clear what is it about God that made sense. And we hold on to that one. Yesterday, part of our quick reflection was that when it is the time of walking through the dark valley of the shadow of death, we may not understand what is going on right there. The pain may be too deep, but that is the moment to remember the first three verses of our lives. That is when God made sense as a shepherd, as a good shepherd, and as a provider, and as a caring, present God in our lives. David then says, it is that rod of the green pastures, that staff of the green pastures, that will strengthen me, that will comfort me. And he uses the word comfort during my dark valleys.
So have an experience, especially in those days of peace. Otherwise, the dark days might blind you from who God actually is. Doc, thank you so much for chatting to us. Truly appreciate your time. May God bless you, and for your wise wisdom, we appreciate you.
Thank you for the blessings. God bless you too. May he also bless all the human beings who are putting their faith in him in spite of our limited understanding.
With
the hope that someday, according to his promise, he'll bring it to an end and wipe away our tears, where we will not need comfort anymore, because sorrows and pain shall have passed away for keeps. God bless until then.
Amen.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.